You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, happy Friday, everybody. I am Glenda Geek in Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings in Norman, Oklahoma. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Friday. What is today? It is March 6th, episode 3897, brought to you today by Kentucky Performance Products. Oh my gosh, it's time to change the clocks. It's Sunday, y'all. Don't forget. Good morning, horse people.
Yeah, it's going to be light later now, but your kids will be going to school in the dark.
So, yeah. It's a plus and a minus here, because then I'm going to stay up late and my kid still has to get up early.
Well, today we have a fascinating interview. We had to pre-record this interview. We're in the breeds of the alphabet, and look at me. I got two done in 2 weeks. How impressed are you? But today we're doing the Przewalski horses, which starts with a P, by the way. We did O last week. We're doing P this week. And we have Ben Novak. He's the lead scientist at the conservation nonprofit Revive and Restore. Oh my God, this is one of the, we normally don't go over 15 minutes with the guests. It's kind of an unwritten rule we have. I think this was 30 minutes because it was just so fascinating. He's such a cool dude.
We were just so interested. Like, it was just fascinating talking about how they do genetics. So I know it's going to go long, but hopefully you guys will like it.
Hang with it. It's worth it. It's definitely worth it. It's just, I learned so much. And we've talked about this topic, clones and Viagen and Przewalski horses a number of times, but I learned so much from this
guy. I mean, we are moments away from Jurassic Park.
That's the impression I got, actually. All right. We're going to pick some winners for really bad ads today, too. And we have a whole new batch of bad ads for you as well. In the Auditor Post show, I have the latest Guinness World Records that involve animals. Awesome. There you go. We got some new ones of that's coming up too. I always bring this up every year, and I know some of you are sick of hearing about it probably because I bring it up every year. But it's National Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, Colon Cancer Awareness Month, and I just want to remind people. One thing has changed since I brought it up last year, and for those that are new to here, I had colon cancer about 5 years ago, and I'm clean now, thankfully. Had surgery and all that. But it is now the number one cause of cancer death for men and women under the age of 50. It's above breast cancer and all the other cancers. It has surpassed all of that. The biggest problem with colon cancer now is people are getting it much, much, much younger. There's so many 20 and 30-year-olds getting colon cancer.
And what age are women supposed to be screened for the first time?
Everybody now is 45, starting at 45. But watch for blood in the stool is the biggest thing. If you see that consistently, then go get checked immediately. And what they're saying is the biggest problem is that 3 out of 4 younger patients aren't being diagnosed until the cancer's reached stage 4, until it's too late. It's one of the good news is when it's caught early, the survival rate's 95%. So, in my case, they did the surgery, they got it out and been constant checking and, all of that. But if you catch it early enough, then you have a darn good chance of surviving it. The problem is with younger people, doctors weren't even screening for it with younger people because they thought, they can't be getting colon cancer. It was always an old people thing. Not anymore. And now if you go in and tell your doctor, like you have blood in the stool or there's any other changes, they're going to check you. Period, because they're seeing it so often now. So I'm just encouraging everybody. They have the home test now too, Cologuard. The home test you can do, and a lot of time when you go to your family doctor and say, I'm 45, I want to get tested, they'll have you do the home one first. So it's not like you have to get a colonoscopy, which is everybody's favorite thing to do. Saved my life though, so there you go. And I know every year I talk about this, I get a couple of people that go do it, so... So I just wanted to remind everybody that it's time. It's time to think about it. All right, let's do some daily winnies.
Happy birthday, auditors. Ugh. Happy birthday to you.
What the hell was that?
I'm still running through the ones that I was sent to by... AI auditor.
There is no way somebody sent you that. You AI'd that thing, didn't you?
No, all of these are. They're all done through AI that they sent over. These have all been AI.
That took me right back to like high school when there was like boy bands that were.
It did sound boy bandish. I got to say that. It really did. By the way, that was about a minute and a half long. I cut it down to that size. It went on and on.
Okay. For those who are playing along at home, the happy birthday thing, obviously we do it for auditors, Glenn does. But also we had a great song that we used for years. And unfortunately, rights and the whole podcast world of like, you can't play anything that may belong to somebody. It's a whole thing. So we had to get rid of it. And now Glenn is running through these things. So if you guys, somebody has one, you could write yourself and sing yourself. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, be wonderful.
Even sing the last one we had, as long as it's you singing it, we can play it.
Okay, happy birthday to the host of Humble Hoof, Alicia Harloff, her birthday. Also, auditors Tiffany Warren, Lynn McCormick, who's been an auditor and a listener to of ours for about 15 years, and Kelly Hannigan. Happy birthday to all of you. We hope you have a terrific weekend.
I just kind of want to give you guys an update on where I'm at in a lifelong... How long have we been doing this show?
We're in 16th year.
I don't know. Well, for the entirety of those 16 years, I have been trying to book Tom Burlington as a guest on our show. And for some reason, nobody will get back.
Well, has the cease and desist order expired?
I don't know, but I will tell you that he posted something online yesterday. I'm sure it was him. Posted something online yesterday. And so I wrote, I immediately clicked on the profile like 2 minutes after they posted, and I sent him a message. And I'm going to read you my message, and I'm going to read you my the response.
Oh, you got a response this time. Yay.
I did. Okay. Dear Tom, I host a popular podcast in the horse world called Horses. By the way, this is cut and pasted the same message I've sent. I scrolled up for like 11 years. I've been sending this Facebook page, this exact message, but I do change it because now I've had to say we have almost 4,000 episodes. Last one was almost 3,700 episodes. Like each one has like climbed all the way up. I said, I'm a huge fan of yours. I would love to have you on as a guest. Is that something you would be able to accommodate? Thank you so much, Jamie Jennings. Here's the response. Hi, thanks for contacting us. We've received your message and appreciate your getting in touch.
That's it?
That's it!
Tom's still ghosting you. Is he about 95 now? How old's Tom?
Oh my God, he's like exactly the age he was in the movies to me in my heart and on my brain. Look,
he's 70. I thought he was older than that.
What?
Yeah, he's only 70. What? Was he 12 when he did the movie?
Like, first of all, I'm shocked that he is 70. Like you say only, I'm like, he has to be at least 27, like at this point.
When did that movie come out?
Why can't I get a hold of a 70-year-old man? Glenn, what the hell?
It's not like he doesn't know technology, right? He went into theater, didn't he? For a long time.
Yes, he actually ended up being he's an impersonator of who is the old blue eyes?
Oh, with the singer dude?
Yeah. What's his name? Come on.
Yeah, I know. Not Jones, not Tom Jones.
No.
The Las Vegas dude, the mafia guy.
Yes. What the hell? Anyway, he became an impersonator for him and like sang forever. But then, unfortunately, the end of that, fortunate for him, unfortunately for us, Google Old Blue Eyes. It's going to drive me crazy.
Frank Sinatra. Frank Sinatra.
I wonder why.
How did we not come up with that?
Why won't Tom Burlington write back? I have no idea. I'm so professional. So he became a Frank Sinatra impersonator. And I was like, okay, we're going to get him. Like, it's going to be fine. And the second I started writing, he ended up being a judge on like Australia's Got Talent for years. And then he was too famous to talk to me. And now he's back to like, I'm a 70-year-old man posting on Facebook. Why won't he call me? Just giving you guys an update. That's all.
He's now contacting the judge to renew the cease and desist order.
You know what? That would at least be something. That would be something.
Okay, that made my Friday. All right, tell us.
You're welcome.
Why don't you tell us a little about Airwise, and then we're going to go right to our guest.
Is your horse suffering from respiratory? I can read. Is your horse suffering from respiratory problems like intermittent coughing, nasal discharge, seasonal allergies, poor performance, or difficulty breathing during exercise? Kentucky Performance Products has a new supplement. It's called Airwise that can help. Formulated using a synergistic blend of high-quality, potent antioxidants and micronutrients. You should get this first, Scooter Glenn. Airwise is research-proven to help horses maintain a healthy respiratory function. It has been shown to promote normal respiratory rates, enhance lung function, support a healthy inflammatory response in airways, and maintain immune health. To see if Airwise, available through veterinarians, is right for your horse, speak with your vet and visit kppusa.com.
It's time for Breeds of the Alphabet. From Arabians to zebras, we take you on an adventure, highlighting a breed for every letter of the alphabet. Can we do it? Stay tuned in 2025 and find out.
Well, we continue our Breeds of the Alphabet with, say it, Jamie.
Chvalsky.
Okay.
I think.
Is it Chvalsky horses, Ben?
It is Chvalsky.
Yay!
And I have to admit that until I worked with this species and its conservation, I had no idea how to say it either.
Oh, good. Well, it makes us feel better. Well, we have Ben Novak. He's the lead scientist at Revive and Restore and has done a lot of work on preserving this breed. And we've talked about this breed a couple times before and about them being released, the ones that they had bred and the wild and all that stuff. So, Ben, for those that missed it, can you give us a little tiny history of the Chvalsky horse?
Oh, tiny history that spanned millions of years.
Yes,
oh,
exactly.
Tiny history. Oh, my gosh. Well, the tiny history, according to the latest science. So the Chvalsky's horse is recognized as a distinct species of horse. It is separate from all breeds of domestic horses. And it's somewhere, it's, you know, it evolved separately somewhere between like 30,000 to 100,000 years ago. So it's very closely related. They're very similar. And for a long time, people kind of viewed the Chvalsky's horse as like the wolf equivalent to dogs. You know, it was the ancestral or last real wild horse. It's always been a wild species. There is evidence that at some point in time, some peoples tried to domesticate it, maybe domesticated a few of them and rode them. But there's always been wild populations of Chvalsky's horses until the late 1890s, when they were disappearing from the wild. And a number of them were brought into zoos in Europe and North America. And at that time, zoos were entertainment, right? It was come see exotic animals. It was not about saving species. Well, fast forward to the 1960s, when no one could find any more wild Chvalsky's horses in Mongolia or China or Hungary, anywhere throughout their native range across the grasslands of Eurasia. And that's when the zoos were finally starting to think, you know, okay, we don't want to just be places where we put animals on display. We want to be places that conserve and save animals. And that's when a bunch of zoos realized, hey, we have the world's last Chvalsky's horses. And they started breeding them to release to the wild. The reintroduction started in the 1990s. And there are over 3,000 Chvalsky's horses today in zoos and in semi-wild herds and in completely reintroduced wild herds. And all those 3,000 horses trace their ancestry to just 11 original surviving Chvalsky's horses from the 1890s and one from 1947.
Wow. So the breeding pool was not large for the...
It was not large. And that is where my work with San Diego Zoo and Viagen Pets and Equine came in. To kind of help with the long-term genetic management of this species, which quite frankly, when you look at the pedigree of this thing, I mean, These lineages look like a Targaryen family tree. So,
okay, I love that reference. It's first Game of Thrones reference this week. So what, how did you, you were involved in trying to overcome that narrow family tree, right?
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, like it's complicated. I came in from this from doing very similar work, basically the same work with an endangered species here in North America called an endangered species here in North America called the black-footed ferret. I mean, this story of almost going extinct is all now too common, right? It's so many species have gotten down to a dozen individuals, you know, or five or six or less than 20, you know, very small numbers. And then people have bred them back up to large numbers. And this issue of, do they have enough genetic diversity to survive really comes up. And in black-footed ferrets, we were working with those. There's a species where they got down to just seven individuals and that were unique, and they've bred them back up. And in that case, once again, we went to San Diego Zoo. They had these cell lines from historic black-footed ferrets, and these were individuals that were completely lost to the population. So if we cloned them, we would bring in a new founder to the black-footed ferret. And it was going to take us a while to do the black-footed ferret work. It's a U.S. endangered species. There's federal oversight, a lot of things to discuss and work through. And we went and we met with the company Viagen to, you know, discuss cloning black-footed ferrets. And we learned all about their horse cloning services and their cat and their dog cloning, the cloning they've done over the years. And we were just so impressed that we were like, you know, there's got to be other endangered species that we can use this technology to help. So we reached back out to Oliver Ryder, the director of the Frozen Zoo at San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. And I basically gave him this, what we kind of thought was an impossible list of criteria. We're like, hey, can you look through the Frozen Zoo's records and find endangered species related to horses, dogs, cats, cows, pigs, you know, things that have been cloned? And can you see if you have a cell line that from those species that are maybe like 20 years old or older and maybe have genetic value to their species today? Just standard wish list. And he sent back a list with several species that fit the bill. And Chvalsky's horse was right at the top of the list. And while there are no frozen samples of horses that are completely lost to this population, there were samples of several individuals who were not bred to their maximum capacity during their lifetime. And so they don't have a lot of their surviving genetics in the population. And one of those that floated to the surface was an individual that was named Kuporovich. He was born at a zoo in England. He got moved to a zoo in Minnesota. And then he was born in 1975 in England, got moved to Minnesota. They took a tissue sample of him and sent it to the San Diego Zoo in 1980. They made a cell line. And he bred, I believe, only twice in his life, and he lived to be 25 or 27 years old.
This is a fascinating too. So they froze that sample in 1980, and once it's frozen, it's good forever.
Theoretically, yeah. So they take these.
So it
cells,
doesn't get frostbitten like the food we have in the freezer.
Guess as long as there's no power outage, we're good.
Yeah, exactly. So they're in a liquid nitrogen tank. So even if there's a power outage, those things will stay good for a long time.
I didn't know that. I always thought there was be like a time, you know, an expiration date, you know.
There is. I mean, this is what a lot of people don't understand about the work of cryopreservation is that, yeah, if you throw meat in your freezer, it's gonna go bad at some point in time. It might be years and years later that there's nothing left to like really work with, but it's different if you do a process called vitrification. And what that means is when you freeze your meat in your freezer, it's freezing slowly, and ice crystals form from the water inside of the cells. In the same way that ice forming in the crack of your sidewalk will ruin your sidewalk, ice forming inside of a cell ruptures and breaks a cell, and then you've got nothing left to clone from. You need an intact nucleus, an intact DNA to work with. Now, if you freeze those cells fast enough under the right conditions, and if you add basic components similar to antifreeze in your car, then the water freezes in such a way that it doesn't form crystals, but shapes more like glass in it. And so it preserves the actual shape of the cell.
That's fascinating. I never knew that.
Thawed out really quickly so that during the thawing process, if you don't thaw it out quickly enough, it can actually go from that glass state, thaw a little bit, and then freeze back to crystal while it's thawing out. So it's a complex process, but the zoo has done this for something like 10,000 cell lines for over 1,000 wild species. And Oliver Ryder, the whole reason we could do any of this work with Chvalsky's horse is because he spent decades of his career passionately going out to the zoos and the breeding herds throughout Europe, Kazakhstan, other areas, and getting these tissue samples. And the frozen zoo today has over 400 cell lines from Chvalsky's horses that were born from the 1950s all the way to the present.
Wow.
In the breeding program. And so they just have a boon of samples of horses, many of them, most of them deceased now, that when we're looking at the pedigree, we could, if we add $10 million around that number-ish, we could probably clone several dozen more of these and kind of restart the entire pedigree with better knowledge than people had decades ago.
This is some Jurassic Park stuff right here, man. This is awesome. So fascinating. Now, I do have a question going back to the beginning. You talked about the 3,000 or so Chvalsky's horses that have been released, or some of them have been released, the ones that aren't in zoos. Where have they been released?
So there are some reintroduced herds in Mongolia, in their historic range there, and in northern China. And in Hungary, and I believe there's a couple other spots. It might be Kazakhstan and Russia.
And they still have not been. Check. A lot of those horses run. We talk a lot about Mongolia because all the races and stuff that happened there with the horses. So we know a lot of those herds are just left go, and then they go gather them up for the season, and then they're left go again for the winter. They are not using these horses. They're just out there.
So Chvalsky's horses are not domestic in any way. You cannot ride them, you can't use them for anything. You could try if you want to get a hook to the teeth.
We've all done that with domestic horses. I don't really want to try with it.
And they're a stocky, when you see them next to regular horses, they look much more like a
prehistoric,
like a primitive breed, like the conic horses in Europe and things like that. But they have a mane like a zebra. I mean, it's an erect mane. They look very wild. They look very prehistoric. And
they look, when you look at a Chvalsky horse and you compare it to, say, cave drawings, that is what they were drawing on the walls of the caves, was the Chvalsky's horses. And what's so crazy is I have seen them in the most random places. So they had those couple of Chvalsky's horses that were auctioned off in like a livestock auction in Utah.
And that was weird.
Did we ever find out where they came from?
Pretty weird to find out you've had an endangered species with no one knowing, let alone one from Asia.
Yeah. And then I was in Sevilla, Spain, and they have like that Royal Andalusian School where they do all the horses, upper level dressage. They had like a paddock of Chvalsky's horses like standing outside the school, which is just so crazy that you would have that next to all these Andalusian horses. And it seems like they pop up in random places. And I've always been so curious as to like where they came from. Why are they here? But now understanding the preservation makes so much more sense. I mean, how old do you think they go back?
Well, so I think I mentioned earlier, it's not, incredibly known, but it's somewhere between 30,000 and 100,000 years ago that they split away from the lineage that became domestic horses. So in evolutionary terms, that's actually extremely recent. These two species are virtually identical genetically.
I was going to say, is there anything different from a domestic horse? You know, body-wise, brain-wise?
So a really great aspect of this story is a call we got from Dr. Greg Veniklassen at Timber Creek Veterinary Center in Texas. Greg's an awesome guy. He's well renowned in being able to like fix ankle problems and leg problems in horses. And when the first clone Przewalski's horse was born, Kurt is what the hell they named him. They named him Kurt after Kurt Benerski, who founded the Frozen Zoo at San Diego. Kurt was born at Timber Creek facility, and Greg was the vet that transferred the embryo and did everything with Viagen. And about a month into Kurt's life, Greg calls me up and he says, "Hey, we got to talk. I'm worried that there's something weird about this horse." And he said, "I don't know if it's normal or not," right? Because he said he has foaled thousands of domestic horses, you know, and he said, and this one is nothing like any horse he's ever had before. And he wanted to know, is this a goofy clone doing goofy things, or is this par for the course for Przewalski's horse?
That's funny.
Nobody knows.
And he was talking about the shape of the hooves and how they were growing and the behavior and the developmental milestones he was hitting and how it was just so bizarrely different from a domestic horse's. And then he would send pictures, and Kurt was born in August 2020, and the Timber Creek got a pretty good snow a couple months later that winter, and Kurt was just having a blast in the snow. Wow. I mean, when you saw that horse playing in the snow, you realized, oh, this is an animal that comes from Mongolia, where they have heavy snow in the winter.
Yeah.
You know, they're shorter, they're stockier. There's a lot of things that are different between them. And we didn't know either, right? Like, we started this project and we were like, okay, well, we called up some of the people, including one person that I believe actually knew the original Kuporovich, who Kurt was cloned from. We called several of these veterinarians and people that had bred Przewalski's horses at the zoos, and we got them on a call with Greg, and Greg is telling them all these things he's seeing that are so different in this Przewalski's horse. And all these zookeepers and people that have been saving Przewalski's horses are just all smiles ear to ear because he's a perfect Przewalski's horse.
Oh.
And we worried about that to begin with. We were like, okay, so we've made a Przewalski's horse, this wild species, using the cells from 1980 from this deceased male. And we've put the DNA from that Przewalski's horse into the egg cell of a domestic horse.
I was wondering about that.
Okay. Species with different behavior. We've put it into the surrogate mother that was a quarter horse. And we're like, okay, has the epigenetics changed this animal? Has being in the womb of a domestic animal changed this animal? Has being born at a vet clinic changed this animal? Being raised by a domestic animal around people handling it, how does it change it? And so to know that you can do all of that stuff, and yet the genetic instinct of what this wild horse is wins out, was just really cool. And the exact same thing happened with the second clone, who was born in 2023, who was named Ollie after Oliver Ryder and all the work he's done to create the Frozen Zoo and steward all these cells for years. And Ollie was the same way. You know, we created him the same way. He was born at a different facility. He was born at Blake Russell's horse ranch that is used for Viagen. Blake Russell is the president of Viagen. And so he had a little more space to run around in an early life. And he was transferred to the zoo with his mother. Kurt was transferred without his surrogate mother because it was thought he was at the appropriate age to wean. And the second time they thought, well, let's send the mother with just to give Ollie a little more time to adjust. And yet both horses, you know, exhibited their instinctive hundreds of thousands of years old, you know, wild behavior and development. And they're just, I've seen both horses in person. And if you ever get the chance to go to the zoo and get like a VIP tour and meet these horses, they're just astounding. And it's, and for me as a scientist, it's just really incredible to walk up to this beautiful giant organism, and know that it was created from a piece of skin that was frozen before I was even a thought in my father's eye.
That's what's so curious to me is like, okay, like, I mean, I'm no expert, but pretty sure things take an egg and a sperm, and kind of like none of that happened. My brain is just, I can't even.
Yeah. I mean, cloning is wild. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's been biology for millions of years, right? Sperm and an egg make a baby. And what a lot of people don't know is just how old cloning technology is. So the original first people to work on cloning started in the late 1940s. There were these scientists working on frog tadpoles and things, because frog embryos are big enough that you can actually just watch them develop with your naked eye. And so they were studying frog embryos to understand development. And these people started contemplating, well, could you fool an egg cell into believing it's been fertilized if you actually just put in a complete set of DNA, right? Because when the sperm comes in, egg cell has half the DNA, sperm cell has the other half. When the sperm cell enters, it's having a full complement of DNA that triggers the fertilization and embryonic development. And so it's like, well, what if you just took the DNA out and threw the full set in? Would it trigger the same thing? And the first experiment that showed that was possible happened in 1952.
Wow.
And then the first animal ever successfully cloned were two species of frogs by two different teams, one in the United States and an independent team in Asia, in 1957. That's the year my dad was actually born. So my father's life is the age of cloning technology.
And we all thought it was the sheep. Was it Dolly?
I thought it was Dolly the sheep.
Exactly. Everyone thinks it's the sheep. And it turns out the reason Dolly the sheep is so famous is because of that she represented a breakthrough in the technology. So from 1957 to 1996, everything ever cloned was cloned using cells from an embryo or a fetus.
Gotcha.
People who tried making clones using cells from a completely mature adult organism, it just failed over and over and over again. And it was thought that only embryonic cells were pluripotent enough. And that's a word meaning, in cellular speaking, when you're an embryo, when you're a single cell, and you become two cells and then four cells, et cetera, and then a few hundred cells, there's not a ton of change. And so basically you're just an embryo made up of a bunch of stem cells. And those cells can become any tissue in the body, right? Like at some point, some of those cells are going to become the heart. Some of those cells are going to become the liver. Some are going to become the bones and the skin, et cetera. But they all started out the same. And so that original egg cell is called pluripotent, meaning pluripotency means it's capable of becoming many things, has the power to be many. That's literally what the word means. And it was thought that, you know, once a skin cell is a skin cell, it can only be a skin cell. You could never get it to become muscle.
So that was the breakthrough things. Was that these cells can become anything, understanding
exactly.
That.
And yeah. So when they made Dolly the sheep, she was made from a skin cell, from a mammary gland, from an adult animal. And so the fact that you could get a cell that had already gone through its entire fate and get it to revert its DNA back to a pluripotent state in the embryo and make a baby from it, that was the breakthrough that made commercial cloning possible. It's what made it the thing it is today, where it's like, you know, no one was going to, if you wanted to clone your prize bull, well, you don't know who your prize bull is when it's an embryo.
Right, right.
You don't know who it is until it's growing up. And the problem with, of course, like in the horse people know this, right? So you geld a stallion and then it becomes an incredible polo horse or an incredible race horse or something, right? And it's like, it's your best horse you've ever had and you can't get babies from it.
Jenna or Jamie just got her prize horse and just had it gelded. But did you take any skin samples, Jamie? You need to get those for us.
So here's the beauty, right? Is the fact that someone came along and could clone a sheep from an adult cell. Well, just 6 years later, they cloned the first horse the same way. They cloned a cow the same way, etc. And sheep and cows and things like that had been cloned before in the 1980s from embryonic cells. But then between 1996 and 2006, all these species got cloned the same way as Dolly, using tissue from adults, sometimes from an animal that had just died. Someone found it out in the pasture and they went out and they just took some skin from it and were able to literally resurrect it even after it died. And so what's been revolutionary, what the companies like Viagen offer and Transova offer, or Clone Wild or the other, or Synergene, these other companies, what they offer to horse breeders and farmers, et cetera, is the ability to take the best animal they've ever had and continue on its genetics and get more of them. That's why there are, there's a polo horse team where all the horses on the team are clones of the same high performing animal.
Before we run out of time, this is fascinating stuff. And you know, it's funny when you mentioned Blake Russell, we've interviewed probably 6,000-7,000 guests now over the years. And Blake was the 10th guest I ever interviewed in 2008. I mean, that was back, when they were first starting to do horses back then. And I remember him being a fascinating guest all those years ago. I've learned a lot today. I don't know how to ask this question. The Chvalsky's horse. First of all, one other question. How the heck did it get the name? Was it the guy who just decided I'm going to name it after me?
It was a Russian scientist that formally described them to, Western science.
Okay.
And his name was Chvalsky.
Okay, so he just named it.
They called him Chvalsky's horses. Okay. Now, a much easier name to say is the actual Mongolian name for the horse, which is Taki.
Taki. There we go. So what are your impressions about this particular species of animal?
Oh, I think they're fascinating. I knew about Chvalsky's horses young. I grew up in Western North Dakota, and my grandfather had horses, chiefly quarter horses, a couple paints, though. And we weren't big horse people. I was never equestrian, but I grew up kind of getting on horseback every once in a while. And I knew those horses, and I went to the Minot Zoo and the Bismarck Zoo, and they had these horses that looked pretty different. And I learned about those young, and I was like, what are these? And all these Chvalsky's horses. And I was fascinated by conservation and wildlife. So I knew from a young age, like, there was this wild horse versus these domestic horses. And so, when we had the opportunity to move a project forward to add something so incredible for this species, and mind you that this species is not having any inbreeding problems right now. I mean, it's very inbred, but there aren't malformed babies. They're not having fertility issues. And that's what I think was the real game changer here, is a lot of people, they don't try to fix the problem until it's a big problem. Mm. And we were like, well, we know there's low genetic diversity. We know there's a lot of inbreeding in this population. How about we get out ahead of that for a change, mm-hmm. so that we never see a problem? And so showing that we could clone from cells from 40 years ago, not once, but twice, and it has a really good efficiency rate with that cell line. There's a lot more science that could be done here, but just doing it. And now we're waiting, right? Like, this year could be the year that Kurt finally breeds. He's old enough now to be sexually mature. And that's been the frustration, right, is the black-footed ferrets. It's a 42-day pregnancy. They're born. They mature 1 year later, and they start breeding. And so it's waiting 11 months to have a baby.
Sooner satisfaction.
Waiting 5 years for it to sexually mature. It's been like, oh, man. So, I think the milestones and the big news for this species are from this project. They're still on their way. And that's kind of fun that, there will be probably a decade of my life where I still get to check in and be like, okay, where is this going? What's happening? But I'll tell you this, being from North Dakota, one thing that was really, really fascinating and just cool to me, maybe not cool to anybody else, but when Kurt was born in 2020, we ended up getting a little pedigree of who was related to him from the zoo group that saves Przewalski's horses, a group of a lot of zoos. And so we got to see Kuporovich from, you know, 1975 when he was bred twice in his life and how many descendants he actually has in the population today. And, you know, there are a few dozen out of the 3,000. So once again, like, you know, a very small contribution, right? These clones give him a completely new lifetime to add genetics into the population. But what was neat was seeing that at one of the zoos in North Dakota in the year 2020, the great, great grandson of Kuporovich was born the same year that Kuporovich's genetic twin was brought into the world. And it just makes, you know, for me, it makes me think about time differently. It makes me think about a lot of things just differently. And when I got to meet Kurt in person and touch him, and he's living and breathing and vibrant, you know, it wasn't a science experiment anymore. It was just the miracle of life.
Oh, I love that.
Cool. Well, we have plain run out of time. This has been absolutely fascinating. We love this stuff. And in fact, you know, we've been talking about the cloning, and we've had Viagen on a number of times. So for us, it's just fascinating to hear it go more in depth with you. That's what's cool for us.
To be fair, I love that you, as a scientist, are like, I've got to get all these pieces and parts. And then you're like, oh my God, he's so pretty. Yes,
look at that. I made that. Well, Ben, thank you for doing this. It's Revive and Restore. Is there a website?
Yeah, it's reviverestore.org. We are a nonprofit organization, so anyone can donate to our work. We have work saving coral reefs, saving kelp forests, studying the genomes of endangered species all over the world. We fund currently over 60 projects in 25 nations in the world. And some of those are making completely new cutting edge biotechnologies. Others are taking things that already exist and getting them, you know, out of like biomedicine and agriculture and getting them working in conservation. So there's a lot under our umbrella that we do, and it's run completely on philanthropic donations.
Cool. Great website. Love it. I've been staring at it for an hour now. So,
and you know, the black-footed ferret is cute. Thank you for joining us.
I made a couple kind of narrated PowerPoint videos on the website. If anybody wants to like get a little 4 to 5 minute crash course on what we do as an organization or like what the biotechnology is and what it means, there's a couple of videos on the homepage.
You can also look at baby Przewalski horses.
Yeah. There's no shortage of beautiful pictures of Kurt and Holly.
Thank you, Ben. We appreciate your time.
Have a good one.
Tired of flies bugging your barn? Kill flies before they hatch with Fly Predators, nature's fly-fighting secret that can kill as many as 70,000 flies in a single delivery. Start early and enjoy fewer flies all season. Learn more at spalding-labs.com.
If you ain't met one by now, you're bound to sooner or later. He says one thing and he means another, but hey, he can't help it. He's a horse trader. Horse trading. Well, it's a laissez-faire, let the buyer beware. Horse trading, they tell a low-down lie with a sincere stare. Horse trading, well, if they're talking in circles and the deal ain't square, he's a master in the fine art of persuading. Horse trading.
That's right. It's time for Really Bad Ads, that time of the week when we read ads that are submitted by listeners from Craigslist or Facebook, and we just have a little bit of fun with them. They usually involve horses or farm stuff. Now, we give away prizes every month, and it's time to pick the prizes. So the first prize we have to give away, and these are all people who have submitted in the past month, actually a little longer than a month, and then we also give double the entries for people who read the ads themselves, which we've only had a couple of. Come on, people. Get with it.
Y'all are slacking. By the way, just to follow up on something that happened earlier, during all of this, while we've been, you know, playing whatever, doing the stuff, I went onto Tom Burlington's website and looked him up, and I got it. There's an email address on there. So I went in my phone and I've been typing an email, and I went to plug in his email address, and my phone already knew the address. So clearly I've written to this email address in the past, but you know what, Damon, I'm doing it again. I don't care.
All right. First prize we have is the Grace and Grit hats we've been talking about all month. They are the very fancy, very stylish kind of Elmer Fudd type hats with the fold down ears. And
a sexy Elmer Fudd.
Yeah,
okay.
These are
bougie,
these really
Elmer
are.
Fudd.
And we're giving away one of those. And by the way, if you want to check it out, it's Grace and the letter N grit.com, and put in the coupon code HRN to get 10% off your next hat order. But we're going to give away a $100 gift certificate so somebody can go in and buy one themselves. And I
actually, that'll get you a couple. So here we go.
All right. I'm going to have you pick a number between 1 and 211.
9.
And number 9 is Matt Hagee. Hey, Matt, you can get yourself a hat. And you need it. He lives up there in Virginia or somewhere, I think. So he's somewhere cold. You need a hat, Matt. And they make men's, too. So there we go. All right. Congratulations, Matt. I'll get the details out to you. And then we have, this would cause some confusion, so I need to explain it. I don't think I did a very good job. We actually did an interview with her last week on the show, and I don't think we did a good job. It's the gift pack from Watercolor Western. So Florelle is an artist, and I said that she paints saddles. And we tried to explain that these are actually art pieces you put on the wall. They're in the shape of a saddle. The art is in the shape of a saddle, and she paints stuff inside the saddle shape, like flowers and designs and things like that. She's not actually painting a physical saddle.
If you want some more details, go to her website.
Yeah, okay? watercolorwestern.com and explain it all. And then you'll look at it. It's very hard to explain. You'll look at it and go, oh, that's cool. That's what. And we're giving away 3 prints, a card pack, and a sticker pack to a lucky winner today. It's worth $250. And we're going to have you still pick between 1 and 211.
Well, I did 9 last time. Let's go with 10.
Roxana White. Congratulations, Roxana. I think you're going to enjoy these prints. They're really cool. And they're also, actually, the coupon code expired there. It was only for February. But if you want to check it out, it's watercolorwestern.com. All right, let's do some bad ads. We had a couple people, Michelle and Katie, that we won't have time to get to this week. Sorry about that. But you're still entered. You were still entered in the prizes. We'll have new prizes for you next week. Melissa sent this one in. I'm putting this mare on the market because I'm pregnant and hormonal, and I already have 5 mares who are just as hormonal, and something has to give.
That's a lot of uteruses.
She's broke but green as they come and hasn't been ridden since December. No, you may not ride her. Price reflects. She's very sweet, and she wants to be your bestie, but unfortunately right now, I don't want to be hers. She is up to date on everything. Come and get her before I'm no longer hormonal and have the wherewithal to put some rides on her.
Oh, yeah, what a threat, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening. Yeah. This poor husband has to put up with her and the 5 mares. First thing I thought of.
Yeah, you're pregnant. You're like, sell it all. Take the husband too.
Yeah, I want them all gone. I just want some peace and quiet.
Okay, well, Sandy sent the next one in. Are these all from the same place? Or is just all the...
It's the way the... Jennifer said they were Facebook, but she had to cut them different.
Oh, so. Okay. I'm like, this font is weird. I don't recognize it from Facebook. Okay, so this is Facebook. Sandy sent this one in. 15.310, you're a thorough twat gelding. Free to who doesn't
to
mind. It's a, I don't know. We're not in England. Can we? It was a whole one
they
word.
They say it all the time over there. So it's like, yeah.
Free to who doesn't mind wasting their time running around a field. Must be able to tolerate constant stress and ridiculous vet bills. These are like the non-sale ads. Great for the farrier as long as you don't tie him. Fantastic to load and will loose his mind as soon as you start the engine.
Okay, that's different. You can get him in, but then he don't like it done.
Usually I turn the engine on to calm him down. Brilliant to clip and can kick a flea off a dog's nose. What does one have to do with the other? That's one sentence. Rides like a rusty double-decker bus. Massive scope over fences, but is terrified of colored poles. Brush boxes, wing standards, and coops.
In other words, he's useless.
He'll go over a brown pole, Glenn. That's what I heard.
Be great in hunters, I guess.
Great dressage prospect. Best sideways canter you'll ever experience. Seen most farm equipment and lots of dogs. Hates them all. Only letting him go as I need to clear the debt at the feed store. Comes with tack that is worth more than my car. Has more clothes than Kim Kardashian. Drop me a DM.
You're right. The negative sell is the key to the day.
It's strong today. Oh, no. Is this next one AI? I think probably all of these are a little AI.
Lily sent this one in. Love is Forever, a.k.a. Quinn. 16.3 hand thoroughbred and percheron by Uptown Charlie Brown.
Oh, yeah. Love that guy. Super famous.
This guy is talented and needs a job. Not a part-time greeter at Wally Mart sort of job. Quinn needs a hard graft dawn to... Oh, God, this is so AI. Quinn needs a hard graft dawn to dusk 6 days a week job. He is a talented and athletic unicorn and deserves, nay, demands the best rider. Oh, you know once it say nay, demands, it's AI. He will be all fancy, but his superpower is jumping. Not little sticks either. That big oxer at the far end side of the arena. Period. What about the big oxer? Far side of the arena.
That's the one he's going to jump on. Oh, duh. Okay.
Think big jumper tracks, and you better be wearing your big girl panties. If you're a jumper rider that wants a horse that jumps better than you do but has already sold your spare kidney for your current mud jumper, reach out and come to meet Quinn. Okay, the AI ads are terrible, too. This is a terrible...
You're right. We now have gone full circle. People trying to be clever with AI, and now AI is worse than if you would have just written it.
What's that terrible ad?
Hey, basically, he's a thoroughbred percheron that likes to jump.
Yeah, that would have been a great ad. It probably doesn't like to jump colored poles, though. So. Oh, did you see the picture? I didn't see the picture.
That is a picture. It looks like a jump I would build, which is it's like they're free jumping this gray horse away from the camera. So you can't see his face or his form or anything, but he's jumping away from the camera and he's jumping a cross rail that is propped up against the fence on one end and the other up bar is on the mounting block.
But he's clearing it by about 8 feet. This boy can jump. They wouldn't have had to say anything in the ad. They just showed the picture.
Hey, this horse is for sale. That's it.
That's it. All you need. That's all you would have needed.
All right, Faye sent the next one in. I am going to, you know what? Next person, next week, if you send me an AI ad, I'm going to remove your name from the next 3 months of prize pool, okay?
The problem is we won't have any ads then.
God, there's got to be, just go to Craigslist. There's dumb people there. Okay. This one comes in from Faye. Oh, okay. Well, I have to look at the picture first because I wouldn't know what they were selling, which is, it's a saddle. It's just an English saddle. Devaku. The front, stunning. The back, gorgeous. The side, beautiful. The top, amazing. Unfortunately, on my horse, it's giving fat guy in a little coat. The brand will only take a trade in for another saddle. My jobless pasture ornament is not getting a brand new saddle again. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me, you can't get fooled again.
I don't think that's not how that saying goes.
That's not how that goes. Make me a reasonable offer on my sleep paralysis demon saddle, which has remained in the box, which it shipped in my bedroom.
Okay, this might not be AI. Or that doesn't make any sense.
100% new, never been sat on, not yet oiled. It's been girthed up and laughed, cried at once. 4,000 OBO, no givesies, backsies.
I don't know where this one was. I don't know where this is located.
Whew. It's just a, this is a saddle.
Whew, it's a saddle. Apparently brand new. Dude,
this next one's really cool, though.
Matt sent this one in. It's a dual axle horse trailer for $950. And here's the description. I took the roof off and had interest in installing a more aerodynamic roof. I'm going to tell you, he never got to it.
Yeah, he didn't. There's just, he just lopped the top off.
He had an interest in installing the roof. He never did it. New brake pads and LED brake lights. Bought it to haul my motorcycle, but I sold my truck, had problems. Only want the money I put into the trailer, $960 or best offer. It pulls smooth like it should.
Should it?
I got to say, it's in pretty good shape for a trailer with no roof. It's a two-horse front trailer with no roof. Describe the color, please.
It is Halloween orange with black V painted through it. I mean, this is your Halloween spooky horse trailer.
It is.
Convertible.
You could fill it with pumpkins and it would look right like it
You could
be.
Haul the giraffe to my house and put it in
yeah,
my
you
covered
could.
Round
pole. You could. It's yeah. got no roof.
Why not? Alisa sent the next one in, or Alyssa sent this one in. Horses for sale under $1,000 near me. That is very specific. And how do you know it's near you?
Yeah,
there's no city located.
Yeah.
17-year-old. Oh, I hate you so much. Take a deep breath. 17-year-old gelding looking for new owner. He is common used to getting led around a lot with kids on him. Very gentle, good kids. Starting out mainly walks around PM. Me, if interested, located Diamond Mo.
I got to say, at least the AI ads have punctuation. So there's that. AI does know how to do punctuation.
I don't understand. Very gentle, good kids. Yeah. This is why punctuation is important.
This is a horse, by the way, a very cute, looks like 17-year-old gelding laying down in the pasture. This is the first picture we've ever had where the horse is just laying down in the pasture.
There's two pictures, and both of pictures are of the horse laying down,
which means maybe it can't stand. I don't know.
He's a chronic colicker, or they don't want you to see his legs.
Yeah, one or the other. Susan sent this one in. Oh, this is new. Racing ostriches, Southwest Ranches. Three racing ostriches I have owned for over a year. I am getting rid of them due to my ex-boyfriend giving them to me as a gift, and I've already gotten rid of the ex-boyfriend. Please, only serious buyers. I will have to meet you to verify that you're a qualified buyer. All certificates in order. I will not sell separately. Low 5,000s. Wow.
Let me ask this. So how did a boyfriend turn out to give his girlfriend not one, not two, but three racing ostriches? Like, how romantic is that? Like,
well, maybe she's really into racing ostriches.
Happy anniversary. No, obviously she's not, because he got him, she got rid of the boyfriend, now she's getting rid of the damn ostriches. Sure. I mean, if you rolled up with like three ostriches and you're like, here's a present for you, I would punch you in the throat. Like, that is, I don't need
this.
This
is Jamie saying that.
Yeah, I don't think I need three racing ostriches, but like, you know, like if you get an animal that you didn't pick out that you have to then feed and take care of. And by the way, I don't have housing for ostriches. Like, who has that?
Yeah, I think the fences have to be a little higher. Bree sent this one in.
Oh, so, so good.
It's yours. I just threw that.
Oh, I know. I'm trying to figure out. All right, here we go, Bree. Thank you very much. The title, it looks like a Craigslist ad, thank God. However, it says Sorrow, S-O-R-R-O-W. Okay, that is going to be throughout here. Sorrow Quarter Horse Gledding, G-L-E-D-D-I-N-G, for $1,000 in Rimrock. I don't know where Rimrock is, but sounds good. Sorrow Gledding. Quarter horse with a blaze face. That's like a haiku.
It is. I'm glad. Gelding is the word that has been misspelled the most of any word in horse history.
All of it. Like, if you go to search for a gelding on Craigslist, you have to spell it wrong to get any responses. Sorrow Gledding Quarter Horse with a Blaze Face stands 14'3-4 hands tall. He is very sticky.
It's covered in glue.
Blue eyes with black around his eyes and white eyelashes. He is well break. You can touch him anywhere. He is well mannered. He is sidestepped, trained, and halter broken. Ask for Jenny because it's her horse, but Daryl will answer the phone and she will only take cash.
He's making her sell the horse.
My name is Daryl. It's my phone, but I'm making Jenny get rid of the damn horse. And I don't know anything about it. That's why I'm going to call it a Sorrow Gledding Quarter Horse and just detail its eyelash color.
You think his brother's named Daryl and the other brother's named Daryl, do you think?
No, his name is Larry.
Oh.
But his other brother's Daryl.
Oh, got it.
Nobody got that. We are so much older.
Do you remember that, though?
Yeah, of course.
I'm Daryl. This is my brother Daryl.
My brother Daryl. This is my other brother Daryl. Daryl is selling Larry's horse.
What show was
it? But you got to go through Jenny.
It's a Bob Newhart show, but was it the other one he did, or was it the Bob Newhart show?
It was the Bob Newhart show.
Yeah, God, that does show her age. How old is that?
And by the way, I'm pretty sure I saw reruns, so it shows you your age.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was new when I watched it.
Oh, God.
Okay, that's the first reference we've ever had to that show.
You never know when things are going to pop up. You know what's funny is I actually quote pop culture movies all the time and you never get them. Like, ever.
I know.
However, I say the word Daryl and you bring up a TV show from the 70s.
It was a good show, though. I think we're going to end the show on that. Speaking of which,
I've quoted like 15 movies this week alone and nothing. But the word Daryl. Hey, Glenn, do you have your walker next to you right now, or does Jennifer have to come pick you up?
Auditors, hang on. The rest of you have a good weekend, and Jamie's got to go get prepared to be in the shelter all weekend, unfortunately. So.
Oh, my God. Tornado season is here.
Okay. You probably have a lot of Daryl combinations in Oklahoma, actually.
Sure we do.
I think that's where they were from originally.
You need a ride to your doctor appointment tonight, today?